Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Monday, November 25th, 2013. Once again, thank you for joining us this afternoon. If you have any questions you'd like to email us, please do so by using questions at DGScoins.com. Questions at DGScoins.com. Lots of things to talk about today. We're going to just briefly mention today about the swap of gold between Venezuela and Goldman Sachs. We'll be talking more about that tomorrow. Lots of things to talk about with Iran and, of course, our U.S. dollar and gold and all kinds of things. Make sure you stay tuned. First, let's get right to the markets today. We have gold. Actually, I'm really surprised that managed to be up $5.30 today at 12:50. They tried to hammer it all day long. Early morning trade, it was down and down most of the day, but had a nice little upside of $5. Silver up 20 at $20.13. That was 20 cents up at 20:13. Not a lot of change action going on in platinum, $1,389, and we have palladium up $5 at $724. USDX today, that was down earlier, but that also had a reversal, 0.24 at 80.89. Crude oil today was down about 60, 70 cents at 94.16. That's the one that surprises me most of all. You know, they have this great big deal out of Iran, and everybody was talking about the big drop in crude oil. 70 cents, 66 cents, that's a big drop. You know, whatever, folks, but 94.16 on the crude oil. And, of course, on the paper markets today, everyone is a-cheering. Still seeing some records high. The Dow ended with another record. And you had the NASDAQ that touched briefly 4,000 for the first time in 13 years. So the Dow was up about 7 points at 16072. The NASDAQ up 2 at 3994. The S&P down 2 at 1802. The 10-year yield still trading at 2.74, down 0.01. It's going to be a quiet week this week. Of course, everybody knows that with Thanksgiving coming along this Thursday. And all eyes will be focused on Black Friday. You know, forget Thursday anymore. Everybody focuses on Black Friday. And, of course, Black Friday now begins on Thursday. So, I don't know. Al, are they going to start calling it Black Thursday?
They may start calling it Black November before it's
Black
all
November.
Over. Yeah, we'll start our Christmas shopping. It'll officially begin on November 1st, and then another year or two, maybe October 1st. We'll see how it goes. It may be the Black Quarter before we're all done. Not just the Black Friday or the Black Week or the Black Month, the Black Quarter.
A black year.
Maybe so.
The black year. Oh, my, it is amazing. Shop, 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 shop. And you know what surprises me, Al, since we're talking, we got all week to talk about Black Friday. And, of course, Friday we'll be talking about Black Friday. But it's like, what kind of deals do you really get?
It's not just what kind of deals do you really get. You know, you look at this Black Friday. You look at the videos. I did an article on this just lately where they've got videos of people in previous years where they open the store. They open the doors to the store, and the people pile in. I mean, they're running, they're pushing, they're shoving and jostling to get in there and buy some stuff. You understand? And what it looks like to me, I mean, I am reminded of the monkeys on Monkey Island when you throw some peanuts across the moat, and the monkeys go scrambling for the peanuts or the marshmallows or whatever. And it's a disturbing analogy because what are these people really scrambling for? And what it is some colored pieces of plastic and some electronic circuitry. That's what most of them are after. Ooh, give me another piece of colored plastic. Ooh, give me another electronic circuit. All right? And within a year, where's most of that stuff going to be? It's going to be out in the garage where you used to keep your car. And now the garage is filled up with all the plastic trash that you've bought over the years, and you don't even like it. Within a year, you put it out in the garage. Nobody wants it. You don't want to give it away. You don't want to sell it. Don't want to lose it. But don't use it either. There is something about this that points to foolishness. You know, just says, listen, wait a second. How much stuff do we really need? What is it that we really need? And I don't know that I necessarily have the answer for that, but I absolutely have the question. We seem to be spinning our wheels and buying things that, you know, you're really just a bunch of junk and trash. And you know, now what?
Well, you know, Al, when we were kids, Black Friday, I mean, that was the start of the, I mean, it wasn't Black Friday, it was the start of the season. That's when you saw Santa the first time in the store. You had Christmas parades, and, you know, that was the weekend, Thanksgiving holiday weekend was the weekend everybody turned on their Christmas lights. And but you can't get too excited about running to stores. When we were kids, you know, what we got, we didn't get wants, we got needs. And, of course, needs were always socks and underwear. And so, you know, there was no reason to rush out to, you know, save 20
cents. Oh, I got some toys. We had toys.
Still more of a need than a want situation.
And it wasn't exactly a frenzy. Certainly not the way you see on these Black Friday videos. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about these people that participate.
It was more family.
I mean, you look at these videos, and they're kind of fun. You know, you get in there, it's kind of like being in a mosh pit, a giant commercial mosh pit, and everybody's just shoving and pushing, but they're grinning, they're laughing, they think it's all pretty funny unless somebody gets killed, which happens once in a while when the crowd stampedes, but mostly they're having a good time at it, but still, you know, there is something almost mindless about this.
You know, when I was younger and we had Thanksgiving weekend, the weekend was for the family. I mean, like I said, there was family functions. You had the parades, everybody sort of got into the spirit and so forth. Thanksgiving just wasn't one day, and then it was shopping the rest. Thanksgiving was the whole weekend, and you spent with your family, and you did things. But you know what's interesting? I talked to someone. I just assumed when Walmart and these stores have these specials that it was a special that you could go in and they would run it all day long on the item that they were promoting. But that's not even the way it works. They only give out a handful or so of these items. I mean, not everyone can get one if you want one. You have to get numbers. You have to stand in line. You have to jump through all these hoops. And so if you don't get those cards or the numbers or whatever, You don't get one at the special price. And when someone told me that last year, I thought, you mean I couldn't go at any time that day and get that special thing? No.
So now it's not just buying. It's actually a gambling frenzy.
Yeah.
First come, first serve. And if you're not at the beginning of the line, too bad. You came down and you participated. And no, I don't. That's
like
not necessarily true every place you go. But nevertheless, where we're headed with this, Melody, is the day is coming when Thanksgiving will be celebrated. Get down and get yourself a fast turkey burger at McDonald's before the stores open, and you'll spend your Thanksgiving holiday shopping.
Yeah.
Not going to sit around the table. Get a turkey burger. Get out there and buy something. Stimulate the economy. Do you know why they call it Black Friday?
Mm-hmm. Do you?
I think I do. I have an opinion. I always have an opinion, pretty much, anyway.
Yeah, we all have one of those.
Uh-huh.
What's your opinion?
I want to hear yours first.
No,
I know what mine
is.
I asked you first.
I'm the one that raised the...
That's because this is the day that... Mm-hmm. Many times will determine whether or not the commercial, the stores are going to wind up being in the black this year or in the red. And if they have good sales starting out on Black Friday, it'll probably carry through the Christmas season. That'll be enough to make retail businesses operate in the black for the whole year.
That's correct.
They may have operated in the red for the first 10 months of the year. And then all of a sudden, this is the big opportunity. Get out there and sell something. And that may be, if you sell enough, it'll put you in the black. And that's good news for Uncle Sam, because that means he'll be able to stick you with some taxes. Uncle Sam doesn't want you operating at a loss, ladies and gentlemen, because if you operate at a loss, what is your tax liability? Your ability to pay taxes is impaired, so it's incumbent on all of you who would like to support the government, get out there and buy something starting on Friday. What else, Melody?
We'll be running a replay for Thursday on the program, and we'll be doing a live. I believe we're doing a live program on Friday.
Depends on how much I eat on Thursday.
So that tryptophan is still in your system.
I may be too tired. I may be too inclined to nap still, or who knows what's going to happen. But more than likely, live on Friday.
We mentioned just briefly today on last week, markets were a little surprised. There were reports coming out of Bloomberg and out of the CPM group saying that there was a swap agreement between Goldman Sachs and the government of Venezuela. And, of course, the part of the loan or the agreement between the two, the government had to put up 1.4 million ounces of gold to secure a loan worth 90% of the value of the yellow metal. The swap agreement, they say, shouldn't impact markets, but the deal was interesting because of how much gold was involved in the transaction. And the CPM group is a research firm, and they said that the terms of the agreement is a sign of desperation on the part of the government. And
Government of Venezuela,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And they certainly do have their problems. Inflation is running around 48% to 50%, and the country's economic growth has almost been halted, bouncing around 0.5% down to 2.6%, and that was down from around 10% per annum growth during 2007. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that tomorrow, the deal between Goldman Sachs. It's pretty interesting.
Interesting, and it's also bizarre, and it's fishy, and it's strange.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the deal is that Venezuela's got to move that gold over to London. It's going to be held by the Bank of England, if I understand correctly.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
All right. Now, why would Venezuela, which extracted its gold from the Federal Reserve back several years ago and really started a run on gold at the central banks. Germany followed suit later on and found out they couldn't get their gold for seven years, matter of fact. Why would Venezuela entrust its gold to England England is as deep in the gold suppression market as the government of the United States. Why would they trust it to England? I'm going to make you a bet that Venezuela is on the edge of a collapse. I'm going to make a bet that people in Venezuela who are close, are in positions of power, have agreed to the screwball deal in order that, who knows, 100,000 ounces of gold is still over there at the Bank of England that they are going to be able to access. They're going to emigrate. They're going to have their gold over there in England, and the English will give them their gold one way or another. The people that cut this deal are going to profit and take care of themselves. And the other point is that ultimately, where's the gold going to go, Melody? China, make you bet, they aren't just going to sit on it in a London bank. They're going to move that gold to China. And Venezuela's chance of getting its gold back 7 years from now are slim and none.
Well, you know, maybe just England might just keep it because they sold a lot of their gold. Old Brown sold a lot of their gold, and now they don't have it. So maybe they're hoping for something that might... maybe a loan to go bad, and you know they'll be able to get it at a lower price to get.
Well, you know
back
what happens
England?
If the government of England is overthrown, or excuse me, not the government of England, the government of Venezuela. Suppose there's a revolution over there. They're in some problems. They're having problems right now. Suppose there were a revolution and the existing government were overthrown. I wonder what the deal is in terms of repatriating that gold to Venezuela if the existing government no longer exists 7 years from now, and that's not completely impossible. What if it's not there? Who do you give the gold back to? I mean, I understand that the gold will be owed to the people of Venezuela, but I also understand that if the existing government is no longer there, there's a high probability that when push comes to shove, it may take another 10 years for Venezuela to get its gold back.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they may get it back. Yeah, they might get it back. And they might not ever get it back, but if they do, instead of getting it back in 7 years, they might get it back in 17. So we'll watch and see, but this just is so bizarre to me. You know, why would Venezuela, they must be very desperate, because either that or extraordinarily dumb. One of the
50% inflation is fairly significant. So, you know, I mean, they certainly do have their problems. And, but...
what can you say? There's a sucker born every minute or whatever it is, maybe more frequently than that with today's population growth. And suckers don't merely come in the form of individuals. They also come in the form of nations. It could be that Venezuela is just rising to the role of being a classic chump, and they're not alone. You know, how many nations are there right now that we can point to and say, these people are doing it right? I wonder, how many nations are really doing it right, maintaining their economy in a way that will be sensible, not just for now, but over the course of the next 5 or 10
Iceland.
Iceland, maybe. Maybe a few, maybe Norway, maybe. All right. But the rest of them, including the United States, they're so deep in poo-poo that they're never going to get out of it easily. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedars from On Financial Survival. Going to take a break. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
The aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our extra strength pain relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adusk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Let's see if Melody has a special or not.
We do. $20 gold pieces, each one that you purchase this, for the remainder of the week. You will receive a 1 ounce Silver Eagle free, no cost. It will also include shipping charges. So, great deals on $20 gold pieces this week. You have to pick up the phone and give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, American Survival. A lot of articles, this week in there in reference, to Iran. And of course, gold and the markets, and we teamed up with Wendy Wilson, and they provide she provides the health portion of the Wealth and Health newsletter. So make sure you get there and sign up.
Okay, one of the big news stories we've got is that here's the headline from the New York Times: longer term deal with Iran faces major challenges. The Obama administration, this is the New York Times again, the Obama administration's successful push for an accord that would temporarily freeze much of Iran's nuclear program has cast a spotlight on the more formidable challenge it now confronts in trying to roll the program back. For all the drama of late-night make-or-break talks in Geneva, the deal that Secretary of State John Kerry and his negotiating partners announced early on Sunday was largely a holding action meant to keep the Iranian nuclear program in check for 6 months while negotiations pursue a far tougher and more lasting agreement. All right. Now, so who won this negotiations? The U.S., who bought another 6 months, or Iran, who bought another 6 months before they might be threatened with an attack? Who folded under pressure? My first guess is that it was the U.S. who, despite having the hugely superior military option, allowed Iran to skate away yet again with another 6 months without being attacked. And I'm not here to recommend we attack Iran. That's not my point. But it's the threat. This is equivalent to, the, for me, I look at this as the government came up, held a gun to Iran's head and said, your money or your life. And Iran said, well, how about in 6 months? The government said, well, okay, we'll be back with our gun in 6 months. You know, you can't rob people that way. If you're going to rob them, you rob them. It's, what's that old movie, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where the ugly guy is sitting in taking a bath and some other guy comes in and wants to shoot him, and the ugly guy has a gun in the soap suds in the bathtub, and he bam, bam, bam. He says, if you're going to shoot, shoot, man, don't talk about it. There's a certain amount of that in the our government's dealings with Iran. Now, the article continues. It says, by itself, the interim pact does not foreclose either side's main options or require many irreversible actions, which is why the two sides were able to come to terms on it. In other words, in order to save face, the two sides agreed to a non-agreement. They agreed to appear to agree. So why did the U.S. and Iran appear to agree on Iran's nuclear power when they didn't do anything about it, really, other than just say, well, we'll figure it out in the next 6 months? The Daily Poll offers a clue. Daily Poll is a publication that was, it's not run by Ron Paul, but it started out as focusing on Ron Paul's activities when he was running for president. It is, you know, it's pro-Ron Paul, and it belongs in that end of the political spectrum. And here's the article. Iran will be barred from accepting gold as payment for oil. That's the headline. Aha. Now we're beginning to see what may really be going on in this agreement. Supposedly it's an agreement about restricting Iran's nuclear power development, but in fact, maybe that's more of a facade than a reality. The article reads, in return, meaning in return for the agreement, the United States isn't going to bomb Iran. Iran will be able to repatriate $4.2 billion in frozen assets. The accord will suspend certain sanctions on gold and precious metals, Iran's auto sector, and Iran's petrochemical exports, potentially providing Iran with approximately $1.5 billion in revenue. Now, assuming they mean $1.5 billion in revenue over the next 6 months, and they're going to repatriate $4.2 billion in frozen assets, it means Iran got $6 billion, basically, to sign on the line. They're going to come up with $6 billion that they hadn't had previously or hadn't had access to. So they may come up with $6 billion in return for signing an agreement that doesn't really agree to anything other than maintain the appearance of an agreement. They go on, but here's what rings my bell: some curbs on gold trading will also be removed. While Iran will be allowed to buy and sell precious metals, and that means the demand for gold should be going up. If Iran starts buying gold, the demand for gold is going to go up. The price of gold should, therefore, we've got another significant buyer of gold. It's my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that Iran's ability to buy gold from the outside world has been at least inhibited by America, U.S. sanctions over the past however many years. Now, I may be mistaken about that, but I believe it's true. Now they get to buy gold, but it will be barred from accepting gold as payment for oil or any other sanctioned transaction. Now, what this tells me, this rings my bell. You know, I'm being suspicious. I got that suspicious mind going on here. In return for 6 months' delay in negotiating a possible deal, Iran will receive nearly $6 billion, but will give up the right to sell its crude oil for gold. Thus, the world's fiat currencies in general, and the U.S. fiat dollar in particular, are supported by the U.S. and Iranian agreement to appear to agree. The agreement is supposedly about nuclear power, but what may be happening here is that it has more to do with movement of gold than it does with the movement of nuclear fuel. I can't prove that the fundamental purpose of the agreement to appear to agree was supported by the fiat dollar, was to support, excuse me, the fiat dollar, but I doubt that anyone can prove that I'm mistaken about that. It at least seems arguable that the U.S. was prepared to enrich Iran by merely $6 billion, and we didn't give them $6 billion. We just let them have $6 billion they would not otherwise have had if the sanctions continued. It's not like $6 billion taxpayer dollars went to Iran from the United States, but Iran's profiting by $6 billion, and in order to buy another 6 months' life for the U.S. petrodollar. What do you think, Melody?
Well, you know, I mean, it's very interesting, and mm-hmm. And yeah, it's all about the dollar. It's all about the petrodollar, and the U.S. must have some a lot of confidence in their relationship with the Saudis, and they must find the sudden communications between the Saudis and Israel is meaningless. They must have something that we're. That doesn't concern them, and I think this is going to have a big drop in oil prices at all. People are talking about having gasoline because of this deal. Our gasoline prices will be dropping below $3 sometime next year. I really don't see that happening, but
I think this is perhaps also a gesture
mm-hmm.
to inspire a little bit of confidence. And those people who are holding, especially foreign investors that are holding U.S. treasuries, any form of U.S. debt, it's a way of saying the dollar is not finished yet. All right? Mm-hmm. You can hold on to those treasuries a little while longer because we're going to maintain some semblance to the petrodollar. It's not going to be destroyed by Iran trading their crude oil for gold and watch the price of gold go up and that sort of thing. Instead, this might inspire a little bit of confidence in America's foreign creditors. So we'll watch and see whether that's true or false. But,
I think with the whole Middle East, basically, you know, all the turmoil and disruptions that are going over there. I mean, you had the problems with Syria and, I mean, country after country after country. And perhaps the big worry was war with Iran. And you're right. They snuffed that out with this. So
for the moment. But
for the moment, it will bring a little confidence. And that will bring confidence to the U.S. dollar and keeping that. At least to this level, I believe, for a little bit.
Let's see what we've got. We got plenty of time here. We've got part of the reason this is interesting, the conjecture that this agreement may ultimately do more to shore up the U.S. dollar than it does to prevent Iran from having nuclear weapons, at least on a temporary basis. Here's an article from Michael Snyder. Michael's been on the program a couple of months ago. And China announces that it is going to stop stockpiling U.S. dollars. That's the headline. China just dropped an absolute bombshell, but it was almost entirely ignored by the mainstream media in the United States. The Central Bank of China has decided that it is, quote, no longer in China's favor to accumulate foreign exchange reserves. Now, what that means is that China will at least start spending whatever foreign reserves it acquires in the future, instead of continuing to build up its assets in the currencies of foreign countries, and particularly the United States. They're going to start spending the money. They get an extra $100. They're going to spend the $100. Now, whether they're going to spend it on gold or they're going to come to this country to buy natural resources or businesses or whatever remains to be seen, but they are not going to increase their foreign reserve holdings, at least in terms of foreign exchange. Not they don't want any more fiat currencies is what they're saying, and this particularly applies to the dollar. If so, China is beginning to bail out of the paper dollar. China is about to start buying big chunks of the world, and especially the United States. We might expect that China will start buying even more gold. If so, the price of gold may again be heading upward, if only because, not necessarily because China's demand on gold increases so much that the price of gold has to go up. That'll be part of the equation, perhaps. But also because if China's not going to accumulate any more dollars, they are simply saying, look, these things are going to be worth less a year from now and a year after that and a year after that. And we're not going to get any deeper into this. We're not putting any more good money after bad. We're not going to hang on to these dollars any more than we have to. Michael Snyder's article continues. This is during the third quarter of 2013. China's foreign exchange reserves were valued at approximately $3.66 trillion. And of course, the biggest chunk of that was made up by U.S. dollars. For years, China's been accumulating dollars and working hard to keep the dollar up, keep the value of the dollar up, and the value of the yuan down. Isn't that odd? China's been working to hold the value of our dollars up. Our own government's been working to take it down, at least over the course, on average, over the course of the last several years. Insofar as China's previously worked to support the value of dollar, but now adopting a policy that will withdraw that support, we can expect the dollar's value to fall, right? Perhaps significantly, once China implements that policy. The psychological impact of China's announcement could cause the value of the dollar to begin to fall even before China begins to actively spend U.S. dollars. In other words, by merely putting out this notice, China might actually cause the value of the dollar. There are going to be some people looking at it and say, uh-oh, maybe it's time to run. At the same time China's doing this, of course, the United States is cutting a deal with Iran where it says Iran agrees that it will not pay for crude oil with gold. That helps to support the petrodollar. So we've got opposing forces going on here. China's going one way, Iran's going another way, the United States is trying to hang on to the petrodollar. In any case, if the dollar's value goes down, the free market price of gold should go up. Michael Snyder continues, but now China has announced the time has come to stop stockpiling U.S. dollars. If that does turn out to be the case, many U.S. analysts are suggesting that China could also soon stop buying more U.S. debt. I don't know how much more U.S. treasuries China is purchasing. I wouldn't think that it's a lot. I know that 80%, I'm told that 80% of the U.S. government's new treasuries are being purchased by the Federal Reserve, and I doubt that China is taking more than 10%. They might not even be taking that much, but even so, if they stop buying more U.S. debt, this can't be good for the United States. It might also be bad for the Federal Reserve, which may have to buy even more U.S. bonds than it does currently in order to maintain the illusion of value in U.S. treasuries. In essence, China's decision to stop accumulating foreign reserves is a polite way of saying that the emperor is buck-naked. And there's another article here from the Examiner that we'll just touch on in the last minute or so before we go to break. The headline is Harbinger. 23 countries begin setting up swap lines to bypass the dollar. And they're simply reporting that 23 countries and 60% of the world's gross domestic product are now setting up new swap lines which bypass the dollar, SWIFT, and the Bank of International Settlements, and will usher in a new global currency system which will kill the dollar. Now, I won't bet that it kills the dollar, but it's certainly going to impair it. It's going to cause it to lose significant value. The 23 countries include China, Russia, India, and surprisingly, Germany, France, and the United Kingdom. This means that the Eurozone itself is abandoning the dollar and preparing for transition to a new central banking system. Now, if this report is true, it means that at least 23 nations can see the writing on the wall concerning the dollar's approaching devaluation. 23 nations. If those nations can see and anticipate the dollar's coming devaluation, why shouldn't you and I? If the dollar is going to be seriously devalued, what must happen to the price of gold as denominated in dollars? It must rise. More, if the dollar is going to be seriously devalued, what should happen to the current U.S.-led efforts to manipulate markets in order to suppress the prices of gold and silver? The market manipulation should be abandoned or at least become effective. Result, prices of gold and silver, again, are headed upward. The reality is beginning to overcome the myths and the illusions and the manipulation. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. And we were talking a moment ago, we were talking about the rising number, including China. We had an article on China in particular, and then 23 nations altogether, including China, that are making plans to get clear of the dollar. When you see 23 nations doing this, it just illustrates, look, there's a lot of people that are pretty smart that are saying this dollar is not going to come to a happy ending. And they think an unhappy ending, they apparently believe an unhappy ending is not so far into the future. And part of what we're saying is, look, if these 23 nations think this, including the Eurozone and China and a number of others, not a bad idea if we do the same. We might follow suit on this. It's not an irrational choice, and you have to wonder, why is it so hard for people in this country to understand the possible difficulty that's coming to the dollar? And if they understand that, why is it that they would not want to purchase gold and silver? When we're talking about this, we talked about China's going to stop accumulating foreign reserves, which means they're going to start buying things. And here's a headline from Frank the producer sent us a headline from CNBC. It's Chinese buying up California housing. All right? And all they're saying here, essentially, brand new housing development in Irvine, California. Hang on just a second. I have to stop that. I'm getting sound. I don't know if that carried over to anyone else, but I was getting sound on that article. Some of America's largest home builders are back at work after a crippling housing crash. This is Irvine, California. It's the rebirth of U.S. construction, but the customers are largely Chinese. They see the market here still has room for appreciation, and they're building, and this is just the Chinese are coming, and they're going to start buying homes on the West Coast. And as long as they have money, they'll probably start moving deeper and deeper into the country, and we'll see more Chinese over here. And it's one of the consequences that necessarily follows when you play this idiotic game of living on debt. Sooner or later, the debt has to be paid, or else you have to declare bankruptcy or something violent takes place. But as long as the illusion exists that the debt is going to be repaid, sooner or later, somebody's going to move into your neighborhood that you didn't think was coming. And the character of the nation will be changed. Because we've had a government that was willing to go deeper and deeper and deeper into debt. Because of that, and what is the evidence? Why? What does this signify? It just says we have a government whose first and primary responsibility is to itself, or perhaps the New World Order, but it's certainly not to the people of the United States of America. It is not to maintaining this nation. They talk about national security, they won't even protect our borders against an invasion by illegal aliens. And now, because of their stupidity, by allowing the nation to live on the illusion of debt, they loan money. Right? They thought, oh, this is cool, we'll just ship our inflation. Well, we'll get the idiot Chinese and the rest of these fools to buy our bonds. Well, guess what? They're going to cash those bonds in by houses instead, and they're going to be in your neighborhood. And I'm not speaking out against Chinese. I'm speaking out against morons in Washington, D.C., in the Republican Party, in the Democrat Party, in the White House, who are willing to gut this country in order to maintain government power. It is it's infuriating. It's the kind of thing you sit back, and if you bother to consider it, and you look at it and say, son of a. You know what? It's infuriating. And it was wrong. It's been wrong all along. And it's this idea that we can cater to everybody who wants something. Give something. Come on, let's give something to somebody who can't earn it. And if we'll give it to them, if they vote for us and keep us in power. And, of course, you got to keep giving and giving and giving. And in the process, you are killing the golden goose, which are the productive elements of this society. They're being gutted so government can be reelected on the force of the vote of a bunch of freeloaders who can't support themselves. You can't do that and expect to come to a happy ending. There's going to be a problem in this country, and when it happens, who knows? But we are getting there. We're coming closer all the time, and it's a problem that was created by the government and by our own appetite for welfare, for subsidies, for free lunches, for handouts. Romney made the point when he ran for the presidency. He said 47% of the American people are receiving some sort of handout from the federal government. They're not going to vote against it. You understand? They won't vote against it. Most of them would agree that the rest of the freeloaders should be stopped. Let's stop the rest of the freeloaders, but I still need my check. I need mine. You know, I got problems. I got to have my check from government. But we need to stop the rest of the idiots from getting their checks. But the result is nobody's going to stop. Nobody's going to stop. All they're going to do is keep asking for more and more. And where does the money come from? It comes from the people who actually are productive members of society. Not just consumers. You can't live on this damn consumer-based economy. It's insane. We are running our producers into the ground, largely with government regulations. We're destroying them. And sooner or later, they're not going to be able to produce enough to support all of us. And what happens then? We will truly, God help us, when we turn into a nation that is purely consumers. When we have an economy that's not just 70% based on consumers, but 80%, 90%, 100%. What does it mean? We must engage in cannibalism if we want to survive. We have to feed off the other consumers because there aren't any more producers left to carry our lazy, apathetic, unmotivated asses around. That's what it means, and we're headed there. And there's nothing that's going to stop us because we have no policy. You can't get elected right now if you're not going to give somebody some money. Can you be elected as a Democrat if you're not willing to give more welfare to the poor, to the blacks, to whoever? I don't think so. Can you be elected as a Republican if you're not willing to subsidize major corporations and see that they get some special breaks? I don't think so. And the net result is, where are they getting the money from? Where does it come from? And it means we're not just robbing the rich and giving it to the poor. We are robbing the productive. You know, I used an analogy, an article I wrote just lately where I was talking about, imagine a man in Detroit, which looks like a bombed out city in some places. Looks like something after World War II. Imagine this guy's black guy. He's got himself a little barbecue business. He makes $200 a day for himself. He's doing pretty good within the context of his community. But what is the overwhelming reality of the people who are living in that bombed out community? What's the overwhelming reality of the people who live in impoverished neighborhoods and or ghettos anywhere in this country? And the reality is there are far more consumers than there are producers. And when there aren't enough producers to carry everybody, the consumers begin to predate. They'll predate on whatever producers are left. For example, we got a man, he's got a little barbecue shack. He makes $200 a day for himself. I guarantee you the consumers are going to come up and split his head open to get $200 out of his pocket. He'll be robbed repeatedly and perhaps killed. Eventually, he'll be driven out of business, and there'll be one less producer, one less guy to provide jobs and have a little money to spend in the community. It will be the consumers will eat, figuratively speaking, they will eat the producers. We see the very same mentality in Congress. They don't look like a bunch of gangsters out of the hood. But that's what they are. They are not producers. They are consumers. They favor the consumers and then necessarily rob the producers. And as we rob more and more producers, we push them out of the way. And it's like eventually when you kill all the farmers, when you've taken everything they've got, there's nobody left to grow any crops, how are we going to eat? This nation has to regain its respect for people who actually work for a living, people who produce things. And I'm not just talking about the super rich, because they're as big a bunch of parasites as the super poor. Super poor want something for nothing. Super rich want something for nothing. They're all consumers. Your producers are primarily in the middle class. Your producers are primarily small businessmen. Your producers are people who have jobs that work and produce something tangible. Something that is wanted on the free market. They're producers. Super rich, bunch of consumers. And when you have too many consumers among the super rich, what happens? You can ask the French what happened over there. They had the super rich. They were taking everything the French that was available in France. And when the people started to riot and demand bread, what did Marie Antoinette famously say? Let them eat cake. They have no bread. Let them eat cake. She didn't get it. She just assumed that because she was rich, she got to keep everything that was available. And the net result was guillotines, and a whole bunch of rich people got their heads put in a basket. This is what happens when you let the consumers run wild. And that's where we are. And these are the kinds of people we see in that Black Friday. You open the door and they stampede into the store to buy all the junk, all the plastic junk and the latest electronic circuitry, so they can take a bunch of overexposed, underexposed, you know, poorly framed pictures of everything they see. The whole thing becomes, you look at it and think, oh my God. I don't think everybody can see this. I know most people don't have the courage to look at it. Nobody wants to. I don't want to see it. But when you get to the point where you have to see it, you know, you just got to shake your head a little bit. You got to just buckle up, get ready. The morons are going to, the consumers far outnumber the producers. And it may be that producers have always been a minority in a country. You've got It may be that of a population, you got to have right now 70%, we could say, are consumers, meaning on balance, they consume more than they personally produce. Maybe we could survive with that. With 70% consumers and 30% producers, maybe we could survive with that. Maybe we could even survive if we got to 80% consumers and only 20% producers. But there is a point in time where you run out of producers and you have to start cannibalizing your fellow consumers. And that's what happens when the economy goes down. It's the fundamental fear everybody has. That's when we talk about the gangs marching through the streets and stealing whatever they can. These are consumers. These are the consumers that the government wants to protect. They haven't taught them how to produce anything. They haven't even encouraged them to produce anything. They are consumers, and the government caters to them. And they're the ones who will be running through the streets and trying to break into your house to see if you've got any food or anything else worth keeping. And they're also the ones that are going to start feeding on themselves, just as they do. And you go into an impoverished community. They don't need to rob just rich guys. They'll rob anybody, including who's primarily in the community, other consumers. You got anything? One of your buddy consumers is going to take it from you. All of it. You look at it and you wonder. You know, gold is one of the things you can do to try to protect yourself against an excess of consumers. You get guns and stack up your food, and there's other things that can be done. But the fundamental problem is this mindset that people have a right to simply consume even though they haven't produced. A mindset that fails to respect the producers and insists that we have to cater to the consumers, and I guarantee it will lead us to nothing but anarchy, chaos, and just a terrible, terrible time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.